9:30 after 7, good morning. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, yesterday, Wisconsin Public Radio reported that Republican State Representative Frank Lassie of Green Bay wants to lift the ban on slant drilling for oil in Lakes Michigan and Superior. This hour, we'll take a look at the issue of slant drilling in the Great Lakes specifically, and we'll talk about oil exploration in general terms as well. But first, we'll hear from the Wisconsin Public Radio reporter who covered this story, Mike Simonson, who's based in Superior. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, John. How are you doing?
Well, not too bad so far, but it's just after 7, so we have to leave some room for other things to go on here. State Representative Lassie wants to lift the ban on slant drilling for oil under the Great Lakes. Give us the background on this story, please.
Well, Michigan has been slant drilling since 1979. They've been slant drilling, and slant drilling is where you can put the oil rigs on land and direct them under the lakes, or in a lot of cases under the ocean. It's a fairly common practice. However, it's very controversial because there's the fear that if the slant drill springs a leak, then and the lake's bottom of Lake Michigan or Lake Superior, that natural gas or oil will escape. It will contaminate the lake, contaminate the drinking water, destroy the fishery. So that's what made it so controversial, even though it's a practice that's been going on for a while. Because of the pressure of the high price of fuel and natural gas, Frank Lassie says that it's time to lift that ban, and he's going to introduce legislation in January to lift the ban. It's something that that all states in the Great Lakes agreed to, and Congress also put pressure on to put that ban on around 2000 to 2004. There was a great debate going on, and that debate was settled, but now the debate is being brought up again.
Well, here's Representative Lassie talking about that yesterday.
As we know, there's oil under Lake Michigan, and the state of Michigan has people who have directional drilled under the lake. I believe there's also oil under Lake Superior as well.
So Representative Lassie thinks there's oil under Lake Superior, and we're going to talk with Bert Dickinson a little bit, a petroleum geologist, about that very thing, but he wants us to drill. I guess the high price of oil and of gasoline and of other fuels related to that is what's driving this discussion. As you've covered this story, what kind of traction do you think this effort's going to get in the legislature when it comes back into session?
I think it'll be interesting, and I think it will be very controversial. I mean, it might die as soon as it's introduced, but oil drilling creates quite a row. In 1992, they sunk a 6,000-foot well in Bayfield County, and this is right next to Lake Superior in the Northwoods. It created an incredible row, and it really divided an otherwise very peaceful area, because landowners, farm owners who are struggling, thought that if oil was found, it would be quite lucrative for them. And a lot of other people, though, envisioned a forest full of oil derricks and those kind of problems from that. So it was very divisive when it was first proposed by Terra Energy, which was a wildcat drilling operation out of Michigan. And in 1991, they got the permits they needed, though, and they did sink a hole. And as Professor Dickus will tell you, he was an advisor throughout all this, kind of a community liaison. But I remember at one of the town meetings about this, which were very contentious, I remember he was labeled a shill by the environmentalists, and he just kind of shrugged it off and said, well, I guess I'm a shill. But he has had extensive work from UW Superior studying the geological formation of that region, but also the entire state of Wisconsin. So it will be really interesting to hear, because Wisconsin is such a diverse state geologically that there may be potential in other areas of the state.
Well, I know that this is going to be an issue that you'll continue to cover. You've been covering it for a long time, and it's probably not going to go away as long as the price of oil stays anywhere near where it is now. So we'll look forward to further reports. Thanks for getting up a little earlier than usual for us today, Mike.
Oh, this is late for me.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Mike Simonson, our Wisconsin Public Radio Bureau reporter in Superior, who has covered this story about oil since the early 90s. And this certainly isn't the first time someone has suggested drilling for oil in Wisconsin. And on the other side of our weather break, we'll talk with a petroleum geologist, the person that Mike referenced, Bert Dickus, who's retired petroleum geologist and taught geology for many years at UW-Superior. We'll be bringing him in as we come back from our weather break, find out what kind of weather we're going to get. Regardless of what your geology is, under the ground, above the ground, the weather affects all of us too, so we'll check that around the state, and then we'll come back and talk some more about this topic. Should we be drilling for oil in Wisconsin, and if we do, what are we going to find? That's coming up. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 17 minutes after 7 o'clock. Good morning. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week. Here's what's coming up a little bit later on today on the Ideas Network. After 2 on Talk of the Nation, reporters, rumors, and the responsibility of the media. The National Enquirer splashed news of John Edwards' affair on its pages for months, but the story didn't hit most of the mainstream press until Edwards' confession last week on national television. Media critics say at best the mainstream media missed the story. At worst, they covered it up. That's after 2 o'clock this afternoon on Talk of the Nation here on the Ideas Network. Well, this hour we're talking about oil exploration, in particular oil exploration in Wisconsin and under the Great Lakes. As you heard just before the break, talking with reporter Mike Simonson, Representative Lassay of Green Bay is calling for lifting the ban on slant drilling to allow for exploration of for oil under Lake Michigan and possibly even under Lake Superior. Mr. Lassay also suggests that land-based drilling for oil should also be pursued here in Wisconsin. So the question that we're going to try to answer here in the next few minutes is, do we have any inkling that there is oil under Wisconsin, and if so, how hard would it be to get at? And so to help us answer that question and talk about oil exploration in general, because that's been a huge topic in the presidential contest with a lot of discussion back and forth about what we should do. My next guest is retired petroleum geologist from UW-Superior, Bert Dickus. Professor Dickus has worked for Mobil Oil and Standard Oil California, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning, Professor. It's good to talk with you again.
Good morning, John. It's nice to be with you.
Well, thanks for taking time to help us understand this issue. First of all, let's just get some overview. What is slant drilling?
Conventional drilling will drill a vertical hole into the crust of the earth and in the search for oil or gas. Slant drilling is technically any deviation from that verticality. It can be anywhere from 5 degrees up to 90 degrees from vertical in the search for oil or gas.
So we could be on shore and we could drill underneath a body of water like Lake Michigan, for example.
That is correct. That is correct.
And can I guess no mechanism of any kind is can be guaranteed to be absolutely 100% safe all of the time because, well, frankly, Murphy was an optimist. But is this a safe method of exploring for oil?
Well, this is a rotary method of drilling for oil, and it's been used throughout the world for the better part of a century and a half. It's as safe as any process, but as you said, problems do occur. My first position out of college was working with Mobil Oil down in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm sorry to say that was a little over 52 years ago. But I was working on some of the rigs out in the Gulf, and we were slant drilling or directional drilling at that time using angles of 30 to 45 degrees from any one rig or platform out in the Gulf. In three to three and a half years of working in that particular environment, I never experienced any kind of an accident through the use of slant drilling.
Okay, so the proposal is to start drilling for oil under Lake Michigan from the Wisconsin side. Should I start buying stock in drilling operations?
Well, I'm not going to buy any, John. I was interested in what Representative Lassay said, that his bill would address not only Lake Michigan but Lake Superior. Can we address Lake Superior first?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
He said that he believed that oil existed under Lake Superior. Mike Simonson made reference to the Terra Energy well that was drilled in March of 1992. That borehole went to 4,966 feet and was established as the deepest borehole ever drilled in the state of Wisconsin. As Mike said, there was an awful lot of publicity directed to that, both positive and negative. Unfortunately, when it was finished, and it was finished on April 1st of that year, you'll think back, that was April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
It was dry and abandoned. Only a very minor sniff of gas was discovered within that borehole. So that wasn't encouraging whatsoever. Now, if you were to drill or dig a trench, say from northern Wisconsin across the lake into Minnesota and on into Canada, you would expose some of the oldest, some of the hardest, and some of the densest rock that exists in the world. Rock that under no conditions will ever contain any type of oil or gas. But I'm talking about the majority of the rock that underlies the lake. A minority, say 10 or 15% of it, is composed of sandstone and shale. And this is the kind of rock in which oil and gas is found throughout the world. Now, Representative Lassay is technically absolutely correct when he says there is oil within the Lake Superior Basin. I have a small bottle of it sitting right in front of me at my desk down here in Virginia. It comes from the White Pine Copper Mine up in the western section of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. However, the production rate of this oil is measured in teaspoonfuls per year, rather than barrels per day, which is a conventional usage in the oil industry, a barrel being some 40-some gallons of oil. So the oil that exists in Lake Superior, it's some of the oldest in the world. It's high-quality oil. It's as good as anything produced in Texas, Pennsylvania, or California. But a teaspoon per year isn't going to help out prices at the gas pump. So as far as I'm concerned, I think the well that was drilled in 1992 pretty well put the cap on the question, is there any commercial oil in the Lake Superior Basin? I say absolutely not. So with that, then, we can go on and address the Lake Michigan area.
Go ahead.
Lake Michigan is an entirely different situation. A few statistics sort of sets the stage. Since oil was discovered in the United States in 1859 up in northwestern Pennsylvania, there have been 53,000 wells drilled in the state of Michigan, which is across opposite the state of Wisconsin. 53,000 wells have been drilled since 1859 in that state. In the same period of time in the state of Wisconsin, 50 wells have been drilled. That's a ratio of 1,000 to 1. In those 53,000 wells in the state of Michigan, they have found about 1.2 billion barrels of oil. In those 50 wells drilled in the state of Wisconsin, they have found 0 barrels of oil. So I think that says something about the geology of those two states. However, if we draw that same hypothetical line that we drew up in Lake Superior, and we drew it from Madison, the capital of Wisconsin, down to Lansing, the capital of the lower peninsula of Michigan, or the capital of Michigan, the geology would change drastically halfway along that line. And that halfway point underlies Lake Michigan. Because on the Michigan side, you have a structure called the Michigan Basin, a large dimple or sag in the crust of the earth. And over a period of several hundred million years, sediment collected in that sag and filled it up. Today, if you were to drill a hole in the middle of that sag, you would have 16,000 feet of sedimentary rock, the very stuff that you find oil and gas in around the world. As you continue across that sag to the west now, coming into Wisconsin, those rocks get thinner and thinner, and they finally outcrop along the eastern shore of Wisconsin. That would be the western shore of Lake Michigan, and they're exposed there from Milwaukee to Sheboygan and on up into the Door County Peninsula, and that outcrop is only about two counties wide. So therefore, the rest of the state has a very thin veneer of sandstone and limestone, and the possibilities of oil and gas are practically non-existent. So that leads us to that very thin strip along the western shore of Lake Michigan, and there is where slant drilling is possible, and production is possible.
So it sounds to me like slant drilling for oil would be more profitable from the Michigan side, since that's where the better rock is.
Well, sound like you're a pretty good student of geology, John. That's exactly right. Another way to look at it, this slant drilling, some of the newer terminology refers to extended reach drilling, or ERD, and this is being done around the world now. The world record for an extended reach drill hole was drilled in South England by the British Petroleum Company into their Witch Farm oil field, and it extends eastward into offshore areas from the land. It has a world record reach of 7 miles. In other words, they drilled that well vertically and then kinked it out horizontally 7 miles. That's the largest world record. The largest record in the United States is along the Santa Barbara Channel coast of California, and they kinked a well extended reach drilling 5.5 miles out into the Pacific Ocean. Now, if we look at Lake Michigan and say, if a 7 mile extended reach well could be drilled from the shore of Wisconsin into Lake Michigan, Lake Michigan is some 120 miles wide at its widest. Of course, half of that property belongs to Michigan and half to Wisconsin. So we can only look at about 60 miles that you could drill in Wisconsin. Well, if you went out 7 miles and you look at 60 miles, that's only about 12% that you could test along the shore by extended reach drilling. And as you just said, the best part of underwater Lake Michigan would be on the Michigan side. The worst part would be on the Wisconsin side. So while there is potential, and I think there's a lot of potential for oil or gas, particularly natural gas, under Lake Michigan, I think drilling from the Wisconsin side, I'd rather put my money in extended reach drilling from the Michigan side.
We're just about at news time, so we'll take a break, catch up on what's going on around the world and around our state. And then we'll be back with more discussion about drilling for oil. And in the next half hour, we're going to expand the discussion to the exploration for new oil resources. That's something that's been a real hot topic. And so we'll continue our discussion with Bert Dickus and with you. You can join us at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:35. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week. Well, high oil prices have raised calls for drilling all around the United States, even under the Great Lakes, and that's what we're talking about today. And my guest in this portion of the program is Bert Dickus, retired UW Superior petroleum geologist who also worked for Mobil Oil and Standard Oil California. We spent the first half of the program focusing on calls for drilling in Wisconsin and under Lake Michigan and possibly even under Lake Superior. In this half of the program, I want to expand the discussion to include drilling, anywhere else. There are a lot of other places that there's been talk about drilling. There are calls for more offshore drilling. along the coastline of the United States, and as well as drilling in other areas such as portions of Alaska and so forth. So oil exploration worldwide is on people's minds because the price of oil, has made it more profitable to explore for oil if you find some, and we just have demand, and we need to supply the demand, or at least that's the way this is supposed to work, I guess. So we'll talk about all of those things, and you can call in and ask questions of our expert at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or 263-1890, 263-1890. And we have some callers who want to join us. Let's go first to Charlie in Waupun. Charlie, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, sir. Charlie Buchanan. I travel up into Wisconsin quite a bit. I was listening to your broadcast this morning, and just had a question with no information added to it whatsoever on the question. But my question is this. In the years that oil drilling has been ongoing here in the U.S., has the people that are involved, like the gentleman on this morning, ever taken a look at, does these oil deposits that exist in our country, is there any relation to the fault lines that, you know, exist in this country also as to the oil deposits laying here or in those areas that in the past where the earthquakes, et cetera, have occurred and around the fault lines that exist? Is there any relation?
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, sir.
I think I understand your question. The major fault lines and earthquake belts, as you probably are aware, exist in the state of California. That's the great San Andreas Fault out
yes,
in
sir.
That section of the country. Of course, California is one of the top producing states as far as crude oil is concerned. But if you look closely at the geology, there is not a direct relationship between the location of the oil and gas fields and the location of the earthquake zones themselves. And generally speaking, no, there is a negative relationship between those two aspects.
Charlie, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. 800-642-1234, 263-1890. There are lines available for you if you call now, or you can send us an email. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Well, Professor, the in terms of oil exploration itself, there have been a lot of calls for more offshore drilling. Let's take that for example. The idea is if we explore for more oil, if we open up areas for exploration, that's going to mean that we're going to have lower gas prices. And I think the suggestion is we're going to have lower gas prices by tomorrow if we start drilling today. What's the reality of oil exploration these days in terms of areas offshore in the United States that we might not have put wells in yet?
Well, of course, there's a lot of potential offshore, John. We have the Gulf of Mexico province, which is listed as one of the greatest oil and gas provinces in the world. You have the waters off of the northern coast of Alaska, and you have the waters off of the California coast. Also, we might throw into that picture the waters off of the East Coast. There was a serious look for hydrocarbons along the East Coast several decades ago, and nothing was found, so the effort was abandoned. But I think there's a pretty good potential there. The difficulty, to answer your question, is say, would if drilling were allowed today in any of these areas, and one were to overlook the environmental problems or the fact that they're protected by state and federal law in some cases, it would be the better part of 5 or 10 or more years before that oil began to flow into our gas tanks. It just takes that long to do the preliminary geophysical work, that is the reflection seismology work, to obtain the leases through competitive bid process, to set up the rigs, to anchor them into the ocean floor, to do the drilling, and even if the first well hits commercial amounts of oil or natural gas, the field has to be proven up. A hit on the first well may prove up something, but ultimately it may not prove to be commercial, considering the depth of water you're drilling, the depth from offshore, the cost of putting a pipeline onshore, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm saying is if we started today drilling, it would be the better part of a decade or more before that oil started flowing into gas tanks.
Well, I was reading, as I was doing a little research in preparation for this program, I was reading that a well that Chevron put in south of Louisiana in 2006, they went through 7,000 feet of water and then 20,000 feet under the seabed, and the well cost Chevron $100 million to build. And so it's an expensive and fairly extensive undertaking.
And these wells are 100 or so miles out in the Gulf of Mexico, and that's what we're talking about when we're saying offshore drilling today, at least in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, it would be much closer to shore in California. However, the continental shelf drops a lot faster in California than it does in the Gulf of Mexico. So if you went out 10 or 15 miles in the Pacific Ocean off of California, you may be in waters just as deep as you are 100 or so miles in the Gulf of Mexico. It's very expensive, yes.
Joe from Hortonville had called in but couldn't stay on the line. He understood that there are many oil drilling permits that have been issued that aren't currently being used, and he wanted to ask if that's the case, why should more oil drilling permits be issued?
Well, of course, any time an oil company comes into an area, they'll try to tie up the entire region just in the hopes that they may strike oil or gas. And even if they drill a dry hole, they may maintain those leases for a while. But one has to look at the particularities of the lease. And of course, the spotlight may change overnight to some other area. So one has to follow the situation very closely.
Let's go next to Dan in Middleton and take his call. Dan, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I just a comment. My understanding of it is that leases are no guarantee that there's oil, but that the oil companies pay the government nonetheless. I guess the question I have of your guest is relative to safety and environmental safety for drilling anywhere, what's been the track record in the Gulf of Mexico for, what, about 100 years, I think they've been drilling there, and just what's their track record? And I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Dan.
Morning, Dan. A good question. From my experience, I think the track record is fairly good. There have been thousands of wells. The first well was punched into the Gulf of Mexico in 1938 by Old Pure Oil Company, a company that's no longer around. As I said earlier, I worked for 3.5 years offshore and never experienced any kind of a spill, and that was even during several hurricanes that I experienced down there. Now, of course, accidents do happen, and they have happened before I was there, and they've happened after. But considering the amount of activity, and all you have to do is fly over the Gulf of Mexico in a commercial flight, say from New Orleans down to Mexico, and you pass over hundreds and hundreds of rigs that dot the surface of the Gulf, I think it's been a pretty good record, the drilling industry. I'm not trying to protect the drilling industry. I'm just saying that an oil spill is a costly situation for any company. They try very hard not to have one.
We're going to check the weather around the state, and then we'll come back and take some more phone calls. The line is going to open up for you momentarily, so you can join us if you want to at 800-642-1234. Or 263-1890. Email is also welcome, talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 7:46, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week. Well, next hour, the United States has a vested interest in maintaining stability around the globe, and according to my guest after 8, civil wars in other countries can have catastrophic consequences here at home. That's coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. This hour, we're talking about oil, specifically oil exploration. And how we got started was a call by a Wisconsin legislator yesterday to lift the ban on slant drilling into Lakes Michigan and Lake Superior and allow us to explore for oil there. And we've dealt with that. in the first part of the program. In this half, we've kind of expanded the topic a little bit to talk about oil exploration and drilling in general. And my guest is Bert Dickus, a retired UW-Superior petroleum geologist who also worked for Mobil Oil and Standard Oil California. We have a full phone bank, so Professor Dickus, so we'll go right to some more calls. And this time we'll talk to Rod in Green Bay. Rod, good morning.
Good morning, John. Thanks. I'd like to follow up on your observation on your review of your articles on the Internet, in that I'm seeing a trend, and I've been reading a trend and reading a lot about ultra-deep oil exploration. And what I'm noticing is, for instance, Petrobrazil struck one of the largest finds by going through 2 miles of ocean and then another additional 5 miles of seabed, and then they strike these massive amounts of oil. And what I'm wondering is if this is an unspoken trend that's taking place throughout the oil industry based on any of the theories that came out of the former Soviet Union for ultra-deep. I see this in China. I read about things like this going on in Korea. And now you can actually see it in commercial drilling on Western continents. Is there any piece to this?
Good morning, Rod. Yes, I think there is. I think I understand your question. Basically, the find off of the coast of South America, a tremendous find. Now, my understanding is that they found billions of barrels, maybe comparable to the north shore of our Prudhoe Bay section of Alaska, which was found several decades ago and was a major input as far as oil production in the United States is concerned. But these finds are related to ongoing and new technology. When I was working in the Gulf of Mexico, I made a reference to it some 50 years ago, the general idea was that the bottom of the lake bed contained a massive salt bed, and that was the bottom as far as oil production was concerned. There was nothing below the salt. That was 50 years ago. The well that was mentioned a minute ago that went down into 7,000 feet of water and then 20,000 feet of seabed went through that salt bed and found a massive amount of oil underneath. So what we believed in the 1950s is no longer true in 2008. And new technology is constantly coming out, particularly in the seismology, seismic field, and that's what makes possible some of these new discoveries very deep and offshore the various continents throughout the world.
Well, let's talk about that technology. I mean, I guess when I read this, I had to read it twice because the idea that you could drill a hole that was that deep, I don't know. I can't understand how that's possible, but that's probably just because my understanding is so limited. Explain a little bit about the technology of that deep well drilling.
Well, it's basically the same as shallow water drilling. You only in 7,000 feet of water, most of the time you're not anchoring a platform to the seabed. You have a floating platform, a ship that is specially designed and built to contain an oil derrick. A derrick that is capable of drilling 30, 40,000 feet from the surface of the ocean. It has to be anchored, it has to be stabilized, and you've got to be able to set up a drill string, that is drilling pipe, that is 30,000 feet long. And sometimes that...
that's a lot of pipe.
Yes?
Well, that's a lot of pipe. I mean, those numbers were just kind of staggering to me. I was trying to imagine all that pipe set in one place and used one piece after another.
That's right. And sometimes a comparison has been made. It might be like trying to drill a hole through your living room floor by standing up on the ceiling with a wet noodle and a little piece of sandpaper glued to the end of it. And you're twisting that wet noodle trying to drill a hole through your floor. That's the comparison to offshore drilling in great depths.
Wow. Let's go next to Lauren in Madison.
Lauren,
good morning.
I just happened to pick up your show, and I'm just kind of curious as to why there has not been a little bit more emphasis on the Bakken Shale discovery out in North Dakota and Montana. They've got new technology now with the horizontal drilling in things like this. I'm just kind of curious as to why we don't hear more about the Bakken Shale. Apparently there's at least 4.3 billion barrels in that formation. I'm just like a little bit of your input on that.
Morning, Lauren. There's an awful lot of publicity out on the Bakken Shale in the Dakotas, but it's mostly in the trade magazines. Not only the Bakken Shale, but you got the Barnett Shale in Texas, you got the Ohio Shale in the Appalachian Basin, and even closer to home, you have the Antrim Shale just across Lake Michigan in the upper part of the lower peninsula of Michigan. Throughout the United States, shale gas is one of the newest concepts in looking for hydrocarbon within the continuous 48 states. Yes, the Bakken is very big, and there's an awful lot of directional or extended reach drilling going into these shale units throughout the United States. It's just not reaching the public information press yet.
Here's an email from Marilyn in South Range. If there is more drilling around the United States or offshore and oil is found, would the citizens of the U.S. benefit, or would the oil get sucked into the world market and provide no relief for Americans and make it possible for more oil for China and India? In other words, whatever we find, are we going to get to keep this, or is it just going to go into the general market?
Well, I would hope that we get to keep it. Right now, we're importing about 60%. I think it's slightly more than 60% of our daily needed 21 million barrels of crude oil. So I think every barrel that we find in this country, I certainly hope that we keep it here rather than export it somewhere else.
Okay, let's go to Paul in Slinger next. Paul, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Explain to me why the United States just sells leases on their hundreds of millions of acre of continental shelf potential areas, and even on federal lands on land. Where all the other nations of the world, their federal governments, hires the oil companies to be a service contractor merely to extract the oil, and they're paid and made a profit on that. But the profits of the oil itself flows into the national coffers for all the infrastructure needs of the federal government and for Social Security.
If I'm not quite sure I understand your question, but let me try to address it. In the United States, we have divided the offshore properties, and the federal case dates back to the 1950s under the Eisenhower administration, looking at the Gulf of Mexico. So many miles offshore, any oil or gas found goes into the coffers of the state of Louisiana or the state of Texas. Beyond that, it is a federal offshore property rights. And that general concept has been transferred over into California lands, and if anything is ever found off the East Coast, it would be transferred to that area also. I hope that answers your question.
Well, I think Paul's intent of his question was about in other countries, the oil itself is owned by the government, and they hire a company like Chevron or somebody to come in and extract the oil, and they pay them for that service, but the oil itself and all the profits from that stay with the government. And I think and the United States doesn't have a system like that, and he was questioning why that was.
Well, I guess that's the difference in our democratic system and some other political systems elsewhere in the world.
Okay, let's see. Al from Baraboo couldn't stay on the line, but he has heard reports on oil wells that were empty and completely used up that have been replenishing themselves. Oil companies are reporting that these wells have oil again. Is this possible evidence that fossil fuel could be renewable? And if so, how will that affect energy supplies in the United States?
Well, of course, fossil fuel isn't renewable in a scientific sense because it takes tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years to transform organic matter into crude oil. But what you just report, yes, that is possible, that an old well may suck out all of the oil within the immediate vicinity and then be declared that it's no longer economic. The well is shut down. But oil from the surrounding area may flow back into that borehole so that the well could be opened up again and pumped for a short period of time and produce new oil. That's not really renewing oil in a strict sense.
We're just about out of time, Professor, and I want to thank you for spending this hour with us. It's been very informative. What's your take on whether or not we're going to see a lot more exploration for oil? I mean, is there a point at which it's just too expensive, no matter how high the price of oil goes?
No, I think we're going to see, I hear by this morning's report that oil is inching up again. We're going back up towards the $4 gallon. I think we're going to see a long-term exploration in the United States, but I think oil companies are going to look beyond conventional oil or gas. One of your callers talked about the Bakken of Dakota's, that shale gas. We also have methane gas from coal beds, which tremendous reserves contained within those units. We also have the Green River oil shales of Colorado, Wyoming, and Utah. And major companies, major oil companies are looking at those reserves, and some people indicate that there's more oil in those shales than there is in the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. That is over billions and billions of barrels. And we also have the Athabasca oil sands up in Canada. And, of course, we import a fair amount of, a considerable amount of oil every day from Canada. So I think we're going to be looking for more conventional oil and gas, and we're going to be looking for a lot of unconventional oil or gas.
Thanks for the discussion. I learned a lot, as always.
Thank you, John.
Bert Dickus is retired UW Superior Petroleum Geologist and also worked for Mobil Oil and Standard Oil California. Rob Ferret produced this program, on-air production by Michelle Kofel and Cynthia Schuster. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network.